All right, good evening, everyone. Nice to see everyone. We'll do a discussion tonight on this last talk on boundaries. Now, boundaries in the Dharma, especially in terms of daily life, it presents a bit of a paradox for us. Because on one hand, you know, we feel the importance of having clear boundaries, having healthy boundaries, a sense of self-integrity, of meeting our needs in a healthy way. On the other hand, the Dharma practice starts to question, you know, throw questions into the very solidity that we so much hold as the solidity we hold as being unquestionable. The solidity of our ideas, of our body, of our minds, of our opinions. All that starts to become seen through as we practice. I mean, that's really what the practice is designed to do. And so it almost becomes this koan, like the Zen riddle of like, what is the sound of one hand clapping is the cliche that we often talk about with that. You know, how does emptiness, something that's inherently empty, have boundaries? How does something as empty of self have boundaries? They seem like they're paradoxical. And that's one of the beauties of the Zen koan practice that, you know, the Rinzai tradition uses so effectively, is that it forces us to look at something beyond our normal rational mind. Our normal assumptions can't take us there. We have to be willing to release something very deeply to be able to see what perspective that was spoken from. And so many of these topics in this year of Dharma and daily life have that koan quality. Because boundaries, you know, seem like they're the epitome of separation. While our Dharma practice shows us the reality of non-separation. So how do we hold both of those things? Another way to say this is an exploration of the form and formless, of this back and forth between these two. And how do they interplay with each other? And for most of us, it's a process. It's not a linear process either. It's like we may have a sense of insight, a sense of understanding into the nature of who we are, what we are. And then we have to integrate that. And we bump up against, you know, a difficult sibling, a difficult friend, you know, someone who creates that sense of boundary rub. And we have to learn how to find that balance of really living and integrating our insights and yet being fully human. One teacher said, there's two things which are the most important as human beings. The first is to transcend the human state, to transcend it spiritually. The other, equally important, is to be fully human, to learn to be fully human. So these juxtapositions, these paradoxes, are really such a rich part of our practice. Now, for most of us, when we need to work on our boundaries, because we have our boundaries are not so clean, they're not so defined. They may be overly pushy in one area. We tend to assert ourselves or demand other people to accommodate us. Other times, we may be in other areas be very kind of wishy-washy, almost like we don't feel like we have any boundaries, that we feel like we get walked over so easily. And it doesn't take long to realize, oh, I learned this as a child. This is the milieu I grew up in, my family dynamics and how I learned to navigate that. So most of us, not all of us, learn how to have healthier boundaries. And sometimes it begins of our practice. You know, predates our practice. Sometimes we really realize we have to work on those after our practice starts to deepen. A lot of boundaries, I've been talking about it in terms of that sense of internal sense of integrity, of wholeness, and really getting a sense of that within yourself and another person. Another way we can explore boundaries in terms of this learning to develop them, to have a sense of healthiness around our boundaries is around understanding needs and how do we meet those needs in a healthy way, right? So someone who, you know, has the need of safety and the need of a sense of integrity, you know, a sense of having a autonomy, having a quality of, you know, owning their own experience, feeling like they belong, they can have their own feelings, their own emotions. That's learning how to have that space for that. If we're in a place of power, including being like a Dharma teacher, you're learning how, you know, what are my needs and how can I meet those in a healthy way and not have those become distorted in a way that comes out in a manipulation from the place of power. And unfortunately is so common in our culture, not just our culture, I think all cultures, that people in power tend to misuse that to try to meet their unmet needs. So learning how to really meet those needs in a healthy way, in a clear way, that doesn't take advantage of those who are less powerful or disadvantaged or just, you know, have whatever the power dynamics, is so essential for the health of ourselves, the health of our communities, healthy health of our sanghas. Because our practice, again, shows us this releasing of boundaries in a very profound way. And I would say that's not the best way to say it. I would say it instead in terms of the release of separation, the release of duality. Right? So there's a sense like the boundaries fall away, but it's really that sense of separation that falls away. That's where that paradox comes in, is that how can we release the separation but still have those boundaries arise when they're needed, both toward ourselves, toward others, and then as others extend themselves toward us, to find that place of real healthy boundaries, of healthy meeting. As I explored last week, some of the ways that our practice starts to dissolve that sense of separation. I mean, one of our fundamental things we take as who we are is our bodies. You know, as we all know, if you look yourself in the mirror, or see a picture of yourself, there's this whole array of things that goes along with having a body. The mental projections, the judgment, the parts that you're proud about, the parts that you would rather be a little different. It just comes right up. And we tend to mistake those beliefs and ideas for what our body really is. And we say, okay, let's sit down and close your eyes. So we take away that visual field and we just go into this felt sense of the body, the actual sensations which are arising moment by moment. And so suddenly there's this conflict between our idea of a solid body, a part that I don't like, I feel so judged about, or I judge myself about, and the actual reality of the sensations of that part of the body. Even the identity of, you know, here I am as a whatever gender we may feel most at home in, even that, it starts to become more and more fluid as we see that this whole experience of being a human being is beyond any kind of label, any kind of constriction that we or society places on us. Being whatever color our skin might be and all the things that are projected upon that. As we close our eyes and we feel the felt sense of that, there's this kind of falling away of all those layers of projection, of identification, of conditioning, at least for a few moments, perhaps. And sometimes in our practice, that becomes a little disconcerting because we realize we are really oriented to having this idea of body. That's how I ground myself. That's how I knew I am. You know, just when people call attendance, you raise your hand, here I am. This is where I am. This is who I am. We start to dissolve that identification. Again, this is so filled with paradox because we do need to learn to really own who we are and what we are, to own our bodies. But our practice, again, starts to undercut that. So there's this kind of back and forth. Basically, the bottom line is from the perspective of form, the perspective of separation, you know, our normal way of being, doing business makes complete sense. Look, that place of perspective of separation of self, of body, of idea, investment, it all makes sense. we start to look at something like the formless, we start to look at emptiness, or we start to see it in our own experience, form doesn't have trouble holding that because it sees it doesn't have a place in that. Well, once we really start to release into the formless, release into that inner emptiness, we start to realize that there's no conflict, there's no paradox, that formless actually holds form. This is what formless, from the formless is what form actually arises out of. So this is this journey of practice, of learning that back and forth movement. Our bodies, our minds, our ideas, our beliefs. And we all have those cherished beliefs of truth and an idea of what's right and what's wrong. And we start to practice, thought in itself starts to become questioned. We start to see how that arises as this maybe pointing toward experience, this way of describing experience, or something that's really reacted from experience. We start to see through that more and more. It's just this other thing that's arising, this conditioned thing that's arising based on how we connect with something, how we see something, how we interpret it. And this is where it starts to also become a little more, our ground becomes more shaky in a way, because we so much orient toward our sense of idea, of belief. We start to see that in itself is empty. And again, who are we? What are we if we're outside of our thinking mind, outside of our ideas? So all this is, again, pointing toward how that quality of separation starts to fall away. That sense of distinctness starts to fall away. So then how do we come back into boundaries from that place? How does that arise in the midst of that? Now, it's interesting. If we look at a sense of boundaries that arise, I might have a clear statement of no. I may have a clear statement of no towards someone else or toward myself. If I'm trying to keep myself in a quality of integrity, of not misusing my power or my authority or whatever it might be. There's that sense of internal no or external no. What's that coming arising from? This is where the paradox starts to really become interesting. Because I could say the exact same word, the same, exact same actions, and be behind it, be very much invested in a sense of me, a sense of self, a sense of other, a sense of inner tension around it. A lot of charge behind it. And I think most of, if not all of us, we need to go through the ability to have that, to say no from, even if there's all that charge behind it. Because we often are taught how not to say no, how to discount our own needs, or how not to get our needs met in a healthy way. So there's often that integration period, that things get a little messy before they get cleaner and clearer. On the other hand, that same no can come from a place of a much bigger perspective, that's not rooted in this isolated sense of self. It's like this is a way the boundary can just be laid out, spoken of without this inner charge. It's just the paradox that the more we believe in and know our own integrity, our own wholeness, the less we have to force it upon other people. And the interesting thing is the more we know ourselves, people naturally sense that and respect that. But if we don't trust that, we don't believe we deserve that, then our boundaries, we always have to be kind of defending them and pushing and reasserting them, and people are probing them and feeling them. This is part of that paradox, is that once you fully know that you deserve integrity, you deserve wholeness, and so do other people, boundaries just tend to take care of themselves. And there's also this quality of that inner stillness that allows you to assert a boundary, but still be able to meet how it's received by the other person. To say, okay, is that really an appropriate boundary? Is it clear? This is one part of our practice, is when we draw boundaries, to always be checking in. Is this coming from a clear place? Is it coming from a wise place? Is it coming from a place of compassion toward myself, toward another person? Or is it coming from one of those other roots, these other drives of fear, of contraction, of self-diminishment, of self-hatred or external hatred? So start to notice, where is that coming from? And I say all this not as a give you more things to judge about yourself, but much more as an invitation to investigate and to turn toward, to really deeply acknowledge what's here, what's arising, what's behind that boundary or the lack of that boundary. So acknowledgement deeply is different than expressing it. It's different than acting from it, seeing it very clearly. You know, what is the root behind this action? So in this way, we start to understand that paradox between how can something that's inherently empty, as our practice teaches us, can still have that quality of integrity, a quality of holding clear, healthy boundaries. How non-separation and healthy boundaries aren't really a paradox once we understand that, once we deepen into that inner stillness. And it's a process. It's a process that sometimes our practice jumps ahead into non-separation, and we have to kind of learn how to reassert that separation for boundaries. And we kind of go back and forth until finally there's more and more balance. More and more of a sense of being able to dance with how life is unfolding right in front of us, moment after moment. And last week was Thanksgiving, and as I proposed in the homework, is to bring attention to that, attention to the subject of boundaries and how maybe you're around family members, siblings, parents, children, and how that your own way of boundaries is really learned and maybe cultivated in that original training. And how does that still show up as we are as adults? And how can we find a place of internal alignment with our boundaries, so it can be a grace with them, grace with flowing with them? Can there be boundaries without the personal charge? So in a few moments, we can discuss that if you like, or you can just sit quietly with us. We'll just take a few moments just to settle back into the silence. And as we sit together, sensing that internal aliveness, that internal quality of integrity. And perhaps that can have a quality of non-clinging, a quality of non-separation. And yet there's a clarity of your needs and what's healthy way to meet those needs. There's a growing clarity of other people's needs and how they can meet them in a healthy way. This is learning to take our practice into our lives, into our relationships. All right, thank you for your attention. And so for about 20 minutes, I'd like us to do some small group discussion around this. And let me tell you what you're going to talk about. So really looking at last week and just in general, this last exploration of boundaries, how is that, where's your edges around it? where's that sense of how family comes in to shape how you are with your boundaries? Can you find that quality of internal alignment and integrity? You know, is there a sense of being able to have boundaries without the personal charge behind it? So talk about both ways that you've been able to discover that and also ways that you failed horribly at it. And just kind of have an honest discussion about it. All right, as people settle back into the room or Zoom room, it's time now for any questions or sharing about this topic, or if you have another Dharma question, that's welcome too. And we can both go online and here in person. So let's start with in person. Anyone have anything they'd like to share or ask about? Yes, you mind using the mic? That way they can hear you. You can just pick it up and bring it to your face. Let me switch this so you can see.
I wanted to talk about something that happened yesterday. My mother and I have had my whole life issues about boundaries. And I've had to, over my life, ask her. Well, I've just not called her. And then we work things out and get back together. But she always comes at me really hard. And then it's been about a year now since I've talked to my mother, and my brother called me and said, Mom, I want you to call. Will you call? So I said, yes. So I called my mom and we talked about the issue, which was my father. And then she said, I like the cards you're sending, but I so miss your voice. And I said, well, Mom, the last time we talked, which was a year ago, you wouldn't hear me. And it would just bulldoze right over the top of me. And it takes me months to settle down and to take medication. And my mother, who's 89 and I'm 67, said she just broke down and cried. And instead of saying, well, I have my rights too, she said, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. My mother said, I'm sorry. She said, I'll do my very best to try to work this out with you. And all I could think about was this class I've been coming to about boundaries for all this time. And I said, Mom, I'll call you next Sunday. I'll call you every Sunday now. Mm-hmm. We'll work it out. And what, I'm sorry, it's kind of losing my mind here a little bit. What happened was I realized this is a mental health issue for my mother. She gets so frightened, she gets so upset that she just comes at me like a bulldozer. And I said, just like you were talking about tonight, I said, maybe I can start going toward my mother now. She's one time she said, I'm sorry. And she's showing that she can hear. She's trying. And maybe I can go toward her and be more open to her mental health and to trying to love her in her old age. And I wanted so much to just be able to say that tonight. Mm-hmm. To say that I love my mother and that, you know, moms grow. They grow. And I'm exhausted, and it's going to take me a while. I don't even understand all my feelings. I feel really exhausted, and I think it'll take a while, but I'm hopeful that everything will be okay.
Thank you for sharing that. So there was online, you could hear her okay? Yeah. Yeah, so that's a very heartfelt sharing and, you know, very significant moment with you and your mother. And it, you know, really highlights that when we're finally able to have those boundaries and state them clearly, even though it was really difficult, there's a lot of charge, a lot of history, it transformed into having actual contact, you know, an actual intimacy with your mother. And she heard how her actions have caused you harm and caused you suffering. And she was able to hear it and to really receive that. And that's really the beauty of boundaries. It's not about keeping us isolated. It's about allowing us to really connect. You know, and you just demonstrated that very beautifully. So thank you for sharing that. And it's uncharted territory. You know, what is it like to have your own integrity? And it makes sense that it feels disequilibrium because a certain, you know, way that you're used to being in relationship to your mom, that doesn't make sense anymore. You've really, in some ways, shattered that way of being. And this gives the chance for something new to start to rise. And yeah, of course you're exhausted. There's a tremendous amount of energy. Years and years and years of a pattern that you suddenly, with just a simple statement and simple connection, are starting to dissolve. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone online like to share anything? And you're welcome to. Yeah, go ahead, Ken. Oh, Ken's doing that. So if you'd like to offer a question or comment. Yes, yeah, so Ken's giving you some instructions. And then you can raise your hand or do whatever you do. Okay, Iris, go ahead. There she go.
I think that I just want to a comment on the last thing you said, Tim, in response to the previous woman's comments about that boundaries, rather than keeping us separate, allow us to connect. And that just landed as such a profound statement with me. I suspect I've heard it before from any one of my therapists in the past, but it's wonderful to hear it again. And I think I heard it in a new way. So thank you so very much.
Hey, you're welcome, Iris. Yeah, sometimes we hear things, you know, that it makes sense. And then someday we hear it and it just goes in a different way. Because there's some ripeness or some growth in ourselves, or maybe the way it was conveyed, you know, spoken of, you know, touched. You know, just that beautiful example of a daughter meeting her mother in a new way. Yeah. All right. Anyone here in person? We just kind of go back and forth between the two groups. Okay, Carlito, come on up. Can you hear him okay? No, you got to bring it up closer.
Okay. No worries. This is just kind of a practical question. As I practice more, I'm getting more and more sensitive, and I started out very sensitive, so it's kind of adding some interesting layers. And one is that I've been I think I've been noticing, maybe we've chatted about this too, but like energy is sneaking in from third parties, and it's not evident when it occurs, but like the next day when I sit, I think it becomes very evident. Mm-hmm. And like my body is like literally trying to eject this stuff. And just wondering if you have any tips or tricks for, I mean, this sounds like a very boundary related question. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't want to just like emotionally cut off, shut off.
No.
I want to be present and in the moment, but at the same time, I'm not quite sure how to block, or I'm not even sure if that's the right approach. So,
sure. Can you hear him online okay? Yeah. So is it, Carlito, is it a sense of energy that you've sensed? Do you sense it while it's happening, or is it more after the fact?
I don't sense it at all while it's happening. It's just I've been noticing this correspondence between being with certain people and then the next day, like, what in the world is going on? And then it's like, oh geez, it feels like something must have snuck in.
And does it feel energetic, emotional, mental, physical?
It's like it's in the body, and I'm starting to, you know, I'm becoming aware of my body and the sensations trying to be embodied, and then that sort of seems to allow it to flow out, and then it flows out through usually some pretty strong emotion.
But the emotion feels like it's not of you. It's like seems to be connected to someone else.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, so it's a good question, an important question. And you kind of answered, you know, partly yourself, that you noticed that when you became embodied, your words were, then it starts to release. So one thing to look at is how embodied you are when you're with those people. Yeah, so the more embodied you are, the more you're able to start to sense things right when they're happening. I mean, it's almost like it lands and you feel that tension, you feel that heaviness. And, you know, for various reasons, you know, I know that for myself, sometimes I'm not talking to someone, I don't realize that I'm starting to get enmeshed, or I'm starting to pick up too much of their energy, or things are getting heavy. There's all kinds of ways it happens. Just being more conscious to it, you start to see it more as it's arising. So that's one piece of suggestion. The other part is, you know, people who work with energy or body workers, people who work with like in terms of psychological, therapeutic, emotional work, Dharma teachers, we all have to learn how to manage this kind of energy that comes toward us, because people share in a very intimate way, a very open way. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the story really touches you in a way that you just, it resonates in a part of yourself. Sometimes there's transference and counter-transference going that you're projecting on them and they're projecting on you. Sometimes just there's so much charge, it just kind of, you absorb it because you're trying to be open. And so, you know, in addition to trying to be conscious while it's happening, you can start to develop some simple rituals, or not really even rituals, simple techniques to try to cleanse your system at the end of each day. So, you know, some classic ways are things like, you know, doing a salt rub on your body, taking a shower and intentionally washing things off, going, you know, walking, you know, maybe barefoot if it's warmer out, you know, imagining letting things flow past. Things I've heard and practiced, like if I'm talking to someone, imagine like there's a, like almost like a vortex or like a little, what do you call it, tornado that's kind of taking the energy and putting it up there. So you're like meeting the person, but you're also letting it discharge. Because otherwise you're just kind of like taking it all in. It's like, oh my gosh. And so learning how to let that go past. So sometimes when I'm teaching retreats and there's the interviews are really, you know, I'm getting really absorbing a lot, I like to take a rigorous walk and just kind of get out in nature and kind of let things dissipate. As I mentioned, there can be that kind of golden scissor technique. Like imagine these shears, which are kind of going around your, like an outline of your body, you know, maybe 2 or 3 feet away, cutting any ties that you have. Not like I'm cutting out of my life, but more just those unconscious tethers, you know, and just sometimes what I feel is, okay, I feel this tether in my solar plexus toward this one person. So I just gently say, okay, may you, you know, I'm going to release this, you know, this is yours to own, to take care of, and giving myself that sense of integrity. So there's lots of ways to kind of play with it, but it might be beneficial to kind of find some ways at the end of the day just to kind of discharge in that way.
Yeah, that last one resonates. Yes, thank
you. Good. Thank you. You're welcome. All right, so back online. Anyone have anything they'd like to share? All right, what about back here in person? Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
My name's Leah, and I come from a background of trauma. So just my mother was kind of a rageaholic, so not allowed to have any boundaries. Mm. And I guess about 10 years ago, I discovered that I had PTSD from that, which means that literally, like, I can feel emotion move from my toes up to my head. I mean, it's that powerful and fast. It's like a spark is lit. And so having boundaries for me is terrifying because it means I'm in danger. Mm. I'm not going to be loved, but I have to have them. So I'm kind of in this process at 53 of learning to have boundaries and to be allowed to have them and to feel safe having them, but not to overreact. So it's a really interesting place to be, and it's a powerful place to practice from, not the easiest. So if you have any recommendations for someone like me, I'm sure there's others out there who have similar experiences.
Yeah. So that's a really important question. So describe, how it shows up. So it makes sense with your family of origin that having boundaries just wasn't safe, that the strategy was to not have boundaries and just to kind of be buffeted around without any self authority or self worth, just to try to survive that experience. And, you know, boundaries or trauma, you know, one way to define it is something that's overwhelming to the system. It blows past our capacity to hold it, whether it's physical, emotional, mental. And so those two elements. So right now in your life, you know, can you tell me a little bit more of how you're working with it and where the difficulty might be so I can.
A good example is trying to date. And trying to date in a contemporary way on the apps. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. What a mess. And I think I came to the conclusion that that's not who I am, and I'm not part of that group. But talk about, like, anything goes and people saying really inappropriate things and doing inappropriate things and not listening. And so what happens to me is I might not become enraged with that person, but after having the experience similar to what the gentleman just spoke about, I feel like my body has reacted to the incident or the whatever's occurred. And there's a feeling of rage, out of control rage. My body gets tense and my neck goes out. I could go days of feeling angry and then days of feeling completely depressed and very, very tired. Sometimes it's like a match is lit, or a firecracker is lit, and I literally feel something, just energy move through my body really quickly, and I can't control the rage. or the depression or whatever feeling it is. So it's really very, very powerful when it's full body. And then my mind gets stuck and I will create arguments and conversations in my head for days or weeks or months. And sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and they'll just be there and I won't have any control over them.
Yeah.
And I'll go for a walk and they'll just be there. And I've used breathing practices. Sometimes I just have to get on the floor and lay down. Sometimes I have to curl up in a ball in the bed. Sometimes I have to like call a friend who understands and just talk it out for like an hour or two and let it all out because there's so much energy trapped. It's like trapped in the
yes.
body.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because, and the fear, there's fear around having the emotion and having the boundary. So I'm trying to have the boundary, but the fear of having that is what's causing the reaction because I don't feel like I'm actually allowed to have it.
Right.
And I'm also angry at the other person for not noticing that I even exist, which was a problem in my family because I didn't exist as a separate being.
Mm-hmm.
So is that?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
So let me come back here. When you were youngster, was it more of a sense of freezing when things happen? Disassociation.
I think there was disassociation. I think I lost myself and I was always trying to be good or invisible or I'm not even sure, but I know I was the fixer of the family. I was trying to keep everything together
yeah.
for the family energetically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We try to find the best strategies that we can. And,
yeah.
you know, it got you through. I mean, you're talking to us. So it, you know, it served some benefit to survive that.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, part of it is, you know, honoring, you know, okay, this is the best I could come up with as a young child.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a lot of thoughts that come up around that to kind of distill them. You know, first of all, there's the discernment, like, okay, things which, you know, like the dating apps, you know, you realize, okay, this is like a big trigger. I, you know, maybe I'm not ready for this. So part of it is that discernment. Because a lot of it around trauma is learning to really titrate it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when you get exposed to something like that, it just suddenly it's the whole system's overwhelmed. You basically re-traumatized yourself with that in exchange with that dating thing, whatever it is. You know, so it became too much. So like the training I've had around working with trauma is that sense of titration of have just a little bit of touching that charge, but having a lot of stuff that's cooling down. So like your breathing practice, like in meditation, if someone's having trauma stuff come up, I would say, you know, especially when you're on your body and just you know, things just light up, is to learn to find something externally, like maybe a beautiful tree or something like sound or something that your attention can rest on and relax into. And maybe do five parts of that and then one part of a little bit of that charge and kind of go back and forth. That allows that charge to be much more slowly discharged instead of overwhelming the system. So again, you know, learning how to do that in the midst when you get triggered, because you just kind of went, like, here's your natural trigger point and you went way past that. So, okay, I can learn from that and learn to see, you know, okay, there's, you know, all the skills you'll learn about to see when your mom is going to go off, you can start to say, okay, that's a situation I have to be approached very gradually, or even, you know, going around circling it. So it gives you a chance to discharge that. And also just to acknowledge that the anger may be part of the recovery from that, that it wasn't okay to feel anger. So learning to, often I think, you know, I've certainly noticed that when I went through my initial deep work around this stuff is that, you know, I became more angry because it's like I never was allowed myself to feel anger. And so it's like you kind of overcompensate for a while. Yeah. So that in itself isn't, you know, it can be a sign of health, of growing into that. And eventually you start to say, okay, I can find the right balance and the right dance there. So yeah, it sounds like you're doing all the right things and just have discernment, you know, play with that titration piece. Really grounding your body really have a place of refuge that you can when you start to feel triggered, notice it as soon as you can and step back. If you're going to get overcharged, then, you know, all the skills of talking to a friend, I mean, that relational thing is so helpful,
yeah.
You know, going for walks, you know, all those things. Yeah.
You know, what's really interesting about this whole process for me is that being in relationship, there's sort of an addictive quality because I'm looking for love, right? I'm looking for something. I want something. And so despite the trauma, I don't titrate. I go deeper into it because it's familiar. It's like I'm being sucked into it.
Yeah.
It's a sucking feeling.
Yeah.
And it sucks. So that's really fascinating too, because I'm also dealing with that pull.
Yes.
Even though it feels abusive. Which is really fascinating.
Yes.
Why the brain would want something like that, or the nervous system, you know, something that it's used to, I guess.
Yeah, it's complex, all the, you know, the hormones going through the system, all the memories around it. And, you know, it's also, as I talked about in the recap, that it's learning how to have a healthy way to meet your needs.
Yes.
And, you know, you're trying to meet your needs. You just, so that part is makes sense. You're just doing it in a way that's not so healthy, and you're discovering what's healthy and what's not. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, a lot of it's trial and error.
Yeah.
And just try to learn those lessons as fully as you can. All right. Thank you, Leah. Thank you for sharing so honestly. All right, I'll give the online people one more chance if there's anything else. Kathy, go ahead.
Thanks, Tim. I'm with Iris on this one. I really, I was kind of in a muddle as we began this topic of boundaries. And last week and this week, so many clear and helpful things have just popped out everywhere. And just more like the poem. I love the poem. I'm going to look it up to do with how we're all kind of grubbing it out here on the planet or doing whatever we're going to do. But then how are the planets doing it? How are they? That's a very, very far away perspective on that. But out of my small group, someone else said the thing that it was such an insight into my own behavior. Where you losing yourself and keeping track of everything and everyone else. And you were saying, and we were talking about this too, just to, if you can, when you can, say, how am I feeling? Where am I right now? And it's super helpful. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Yeah, that's so important when we have that, you know, monitoring everybody else, trying to make sure everyone else is doing okay and is happy, and we lose connection with ourselves. I mean, that's, you know, where I was for Thanksgiving, that's kind of the mode that the host goes into, and they, you know, become overworked, become exhausted, and, you know, of course, many of us have that. And just as your group discussed, is okay, what am I feeling right in this moment? You know, actually directing your attention back internally to feel that, you know, sometimes you can center yourself, focus on, you know, like your below your navel, that sense of the hara, the place of center. Sometimes just noticing, okay, where's the reactions going in the body? So I look at it like, you know, how much ground do I need in the moment? Do I need to really find my feet? Do I need to take some deep breaths? Do I need to focus on my center or my hara to find that centeredness? Or do I need to like notice the reactivity that's starting to arise and see where that fire is starting to come up and meeting that with interest, with compassion? All right. Well, thank you, Kathy, and thank all of you for your wonderful sharing. You know, it definitely helps the topic become so, especially with, you know, such personal sharing, you can see that, you know, the courage it takes to explore this topic and to to really see how we can grow into our healthy boundaries, even while we're understanding the nature of emptiness. All right, so next month, December, starting on Monday, we'll switch topics into the 8 worldly winds of praise, blame, gain, loss, fame, disrepute, and pleasure and pain. And let's see what emerges from that. So thank you all, and have a wonderful evening and week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, everybody. Good night.